Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Good morning, Birdland. I'm Mark Brown. I've been blogging about the Orioles for more than a decade on CamdenChat.com and waiting for them to win the World Series for my whole life. Thanks for listening today. Let's talk some Orioles. It is now September the 11th, 2023. The Orioles are 90-52 on the 2023 season. It is still crazy to say they have 90 wins and 52 losses. They are, however, fresh off losing the finale of their series in Boston against the Red Sox, and due to the Mariners' inability to at least split their four-game series versus the Rays, the Orioles ended up losing a game into the AL East standings on Sunday. Their lead in the division is down to just 3 games with 20 remaining to play, and the magic number to clinch the division title stays at 17. Again, that's a combination of Orioles wins and Rays losses. And before I get to stewing on the Sunday afternoon loss, let's just note the Orioles just went 7-2 over a 3-city road trip that marked their second trip into Pacific time this year. And over the course of that 9-game road trip, they did actually gain 1.5 games. And, you know, I feel like it says a lot about how the 2023 season is going with the dogfight between the Orioles and Rays that the Orioles are on pace for 103 wins with only 20 games left to play. And still, it feels disappointing to not be able to finish a road trip 8-1. And of course, you know, the play of the Rays has a lot to do with that because the Rays have gone 23-12 since the start of August. So even though the Orioles have gone 25-11 over the same stretch, again, widen the scope to just since the start of August, the Orioles have gained 1.5 games. They ended July 1.5-game lead. They now have a 3-game lead. And it's such a huge contrast to the last Orioles division winner in 2014. That team never had a lead fewer than 4 games after August the 3rd. And its lead after it had played the same number of games, 142 games, was a 9.5-game lead. So that year, Orioles fans could be comfortable for pretty much the entire month of September and know that the Orioles would be able to coast along to a division title. And as it turned out, they did expand their division title between that their division lead from that 9.5-game mark to what ended up being 12. They got it as high as 14.5 the day after they clinched and finished at 12. So yeah, that was a team that could just coast into the postseason. The 2023 Orioles will not be able to coast. The 2014 O's also had a lot more obvious positives going for them, I think. That team led the American League in home runs. They had the third best OPS of all teams in the American League and the third best team ERA as well. So combine good pitching and good hitting, and it is not surprising when that team wins 96 games, as the 2014 Orioles did. The 2023 Orioles, you know, they don't have that stuff going for them quite so much, and that's why it continues to be surprising. They've won as many games as they have, and for me at least, I am just unable to be super confident they're going to be able to play at a pace to end up winning the division. But we'll see, you know. Really, the four-game series against the Rays later this week now, it starts only on Thursday. That's what looms large. They only have to win one game, and that guarantees the Orioles the head-to-head tiebreaker over the Rays. So that would mean the Rays would actually need to finish at least three games better than the Orioles, even if the Orioles won, or even if the Rays win three out of four, they would still need to gain four games on the Orioles relative to right now. And that would be huge. So really, you know, until Thursday, we can only wait to find out what's going to happen there. And we already know that Friday is a sellout. The team announced that on Sunday morning. So, you know, hopefully, as the 2012 Orioles once drafted on the high of like Cal Ripken Jr. statue night in 2012, maybe the 2023 Orioles can draft off of Adam Jones retiring as an Oriole night. I don't know, but it would be nice. And really, hopefully, they can win the Thursday game. But that's a problem for Thursday. There's still a series to get through between now and then. And also, there's some talk about Sunday's game because, you know what, it was dumb. And it wouldn't stick out in the craw so much if the Rays had not also won. But again, the Mariners, they couldn't do much this weekend. They lost 3 of 4. On Sunday, their young starter, Bryce Miller, gave up 5 runs in 5 innings. The Mariners are now a mere half game ahead of the Texas Rangers for Wild Card 3. They are 1 game behind the Toronto Blue Jays for Wild Card 2. Both the Mariners and Rangers are 3-7 over their last 10 games, so way to let the Jays back in the picture, you guys. But as for the Orioles, they ended up with a 7-3 loss to the Red Sox, and fully 6 of the 7 runs scored by Boston can be traced directly to infield misplays. Ramon Urias, who was the third base Gold Glover last year, had a grounder sneak under his glove in the third inning that scored 2 runs on that play instead of getting what would have been the third out. Then in the fourth inning, again, Urias, a line drive almost right at him, ended up bouncing off the tip of his glove, which allowed a runner to score from third instead of recording the second out of the inning. And that guy, you know, so that was his third run. And then in the sixth inning, this was after Grayson Rodriguez was out of the game, a ground ball literally went between Ryan O'Hearn's legs. That could have maybe been an inning-ending double play. Definitely should have gotten the second out at either first or second base, I believe. And later, with 2 outs in that inning, Tristan Casas hit a 3-run home run for the Boston Red Sox. So that's a lot of unearned runs. The Red Sox, 5 of their 7 runs were unearned. And again, I think an additional one probably should have been unearned. They didn't give Urias a second error for muffing the line drive right at him. I don't know why. I cannot explain official scores sometime this season. So, I mean, that was kind of a mess, but it was messy field conditions for the entire game on Sunday afternoon. The Orioles ended up having a delay of more than 40 minutes before the game began at all. And even when they started the game, it was raining, and it rained continuously, necessitating a second rain delay much later in the bottom of the eighth inning. And I think the reason for that is because at this point in the schedule, there was no other day to either start the game or finish playing it. So they just had to push through really significantly unplayable weather conditions for a large chunk of that game. This fluky circumstance, I think, pretty clearly went against the Orioles on Sunday. I feel like certainly the wet infield grass and dirt and general dampness probably did not help the ball bounce the way that Orioles infielders are probably used to. But also, you know, to be sure, it was not Grayson Rodriguez's best start. He only went 4 1/3 innings, and in that time still managed to allow 7 hits, walk 2 batters, and hit 1 batter. So he was charged with 4 runs and 2 earned. Then in long relief, Cole Irvin, you know, he needed to not serve up the tater even after O'Hearn's had the ball go through his legs. 2 2/3 innings, all 3 runs were unearned there. So, yeah, I mean, I guess the thing about the rainy weather, and maybe people who are younger and hipper than me might call this copium, but here's something to keep in mind. The Orioles are not going to have to play in Fenway Park in the postseason. They will not have to face the Red Sox, who averaged 6.9 runs per game in games against the Orioles this year, and the Orioles almost certainly should not have to deal with an infield in as poor condition as was the case against the in the Sunday game against the Red Sox. So to me, Sunday's loss, it still hurts, but it doesn't need to loom any larger than it was one loss on the calendar. And hopefully, once the Orioles get to playing games outside of the cursed confines of Fenway Park and not with horrible, probably unplayable wetness, then they aren't going to have to worry about that either. So maybe that is just me trying to make excuses. I don't know, but at least as far as the infield defense goes, that's of the things I'm worried about with the Orioles, it is not in my top three, I don't think. So I don't know. We'll see what ends up happening. But I mean, for the Orioles and the Rays, both, just whatever happens in the next series is really what looms to be the most important thing. And the Orioles, of course, are about to play the Cardinals, while the Rays are going to have three games coming up against the Minnesota Twins, who are the weakest division leader in all of baseball. But still, that should be a team that can play, hopefully, a quality series against the Rays and hopefully can take at least one game against the Rays. Maybe with the home field advantage, they could even do the Orioles a solid and take two. I guess we'll see. For the Orioles, though, they are going to be back home in Baltimore for three games against the St. Louis Cardinals. Normally, the Cardinals are a quality team, but this year they will bring a 63-80 record into their series in September against the Orioles, and their quote-unquote expected record is 65-78. So they're not like, okay, horribly unlucky, whatever. They're pretty much pretty bad and expected to be pretty bad. If the current standings hold, the Cardinals would actually have the fifth best odds of getting the number one pick in the draft lottery. This team, they are 25-28 in the second half, although they are 6-4 over their last 10 games. So, you know, as ever, the Orioles cannot just look past anybody to the Rays. They got to play good against the Cardinals as well. The Cardinals do have some serious pitching problems this year, but their offense is pretty good. They've got the fourth best OPS of any National League team. Seven of their nine players in their regular lineup are league average or better hitters. And so that's really interesting. They do have one recent hyped call-up, 21-year-old rookie shortstop Mason Winn, although he is not as scorching hot to begin his major league career as, say, Gunnar Henderson was last year. Winn, in fact, has a 386 OPS. That is, his on-base plus his slugging adds up to 386 through his first 19 games at the big league level. So for the series, Monday night, starting pitchers, Dean Kramer for the Orioles. He's got a 2.86 ERA now in 10 second-half starts. Pretty good. For the Cardinals, it's going to be Dakota Hudson, who has a 4.43 ERA for the season, a 5.25 fielding independent pitching. That's over 12 games. He's only striking out 5.2 batters per nine innings, so I feel like probably we can expect continued aggression from the Orioles batters, as this is a pitcher who is likely to fill up the strike zone. Although that said, he does have a walk rate of 3.5 per nine innings. I mean, the Orioles, we know they've had some bad games against starting pitchers who are no kind of good, and Hudson does not look like any kind of good. Hopefully they can make him look bad as well, but it is never guaranteed. Tuesday is going to be exciting because John Means was officially announced by manager Brandon Hyde after Sunday's game as the Tuesday starting pitcher. It will mark his first MLB game since he injured his elbow on April the 13th, 2022. So it's going to be one day shy of 17 months since we last saw John Means throw off a major league mound. What can we expect? That's a big shrug from me. I really don't know. Reportedly, his velocity was down in the 1 to 2 mile an hour range in his AAA rehab games. So I just don't know. He does have the advantage of being a lefty, but even so, he's not going to get a heavy load in his first start back from Tommy John surgery. In that same game, it's going to be Adam Wainwright pitching for the Cardinals. And I tell you what, Father Time finally caught up to him in his age 41 season. He's got an 8.19 ERA while making 19 starts this season. That's a 6.33 FIP, so still atrocious. And here's another guy with a pretty much relatively non-existent strikeout rate of 5 strikeouts per 9 innings. So again, probably the Orioles should be aggressive against him, and hopefully that will pay off well for them. Even more so than Hudson, it will be not fun if the Orioles are not able to take advantage of having a guy with an 8 ERA on the calendar. And for Wednesday, by the way, there's no Orioles starter announced as of this recording, but the Orioles will go up against former Orioles prospect Drew Rom, who was traded in the Jack Flaherty trade. That trade has so far been a bust as far as the Orioles are concerned. Rom, the only one of those three players to appear at the major league level for the Cardinals yet. He has been poor in 3 of his 4 big league starts to date, adds up to a 7.79 ERA over the first 4 games of his big league career. Again, Orioles batters will hopefully be able to take advantage of facing a guy who, at least initially, has not been up to the challenge of facing major league batters. But that's up to the Orioles for the next 3 games. And really, you know, it's going to be a huge disappointment if they don't win at least 2 out of 3 games in this series. And, you know, when we can't count on any other team to beat the Rays, hopefully we got to count on the Orioles just being able to sweep the bad team they're facing. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I will be right back after a message from a Fans First Sports Network sponsor.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, so let's close out with something out of the mailbag. This one comes in from listener Ben, who writes in about Adley Rutschman. Ben asks, are folks starting to wonder if this is all we're going to get with Rutschman? A good on-base percentage, mediocre power numbers, good glove, great clubhouse leadership. At 25, how much upside is there? Overall, the package seems decent, not great, more towards Matt Wieters or Chris Hoyle's territory than Joe Mauer or Buster Posey. Ben closes by saying it feels like Gunnar Henderson and Jackson Holliday have higher ceilings now. Ben, thank you for writing in. It is a fact that is undeniable that Adley Rutschman is below last year's wins above replacement numbers while playing more games this year. He had a 5.2 BWAR in 113 games played last year. Heading into Sunday's game, a 3.4 BWAR, similar, although not exactly the same numbers with Fangraphs WAR. So, I mean, in that sense, if anyone after last year was out there imagining Rutschman as a perennial 6-plus WAR player over a full year based on how he did last year. And, I mean, I was in this group a little bit myself. I was on the Rutschman hype train after he did that over the partial season last year. I mean, I get some disappointment because he's not doing that. He might not even get to 4-plus. He's hit for 12 fewer doubles this year in about 140 more plate appearances, and he's only added 5 home runs. Ben, in his message, also noted Rutschman not doing as well throwing out runners this year, and Ben is absolutely right. Last year, Rutschman was able to throw out 31% of runners against a league average of 25%. This year, he's only at 19% versus a 20% league average. So the league average went down because of the assorted new rules, I think, and Rutschman still declined much more than the league average did, and that is disappointing. But having said all that, I feel like looking at Adley with disappointment is really a case of trying to nitpick too much. As far as Joe Mauer and Buster Posey, I mean, those guys should both be Hall of Fame catchers, I think. And it can't be a disappointment if Rutschman is not able to live up to, okay, a Hall of Fame caliber career. This season, he has a 13.1% walk rate, or that was going into Sunday. It could be slightly different numbers if you look at this on Monday. He's only striking out in 14.4% of plate appearances, and he is among the top 20 of all qualified batters, which is 3.1 plate appearances per team game, for on-base percentage. So, I mean, that's great. Top 20 getting on base, that's great. And as far as upside for Rutschman, I feel like we saw it last year when he slugged 20 points higher while having a lower batting average than this year. So I feel like it's reasonable to hope that Adley can at least return to his 2022 offensive levels, where he had a 131 OPS plus, which is 31% better than league average. That is far better than anything Matt Wieters ever did over a full season. So, I mean, I feel like for Rutschman, you could maybe hope he hits goes something like a 280 batting average, 375 on base percentage, 450 slugging percentage, which out of a catcher, I mean, that would be great. For, I feel like you'd basically be talking like if you took his numbers from right now and added like six more doubles and three more home runs, that is what would probably take to get to that. And I don't know. If you look at StatCast, Rutschman's average launch angle went from 15.6 down to 12.6. That could contribute. His ground ball rate has increased slightly since last year, and I don't know why that has changed. It does seem like it is for the negative for Rutschman. But unrelated to that, here's another thing for me that is worth noting about Adley Rutschman and offense, and that is that he gets screwed as a batter by poor umpiring calls more than just about or potentially literally any other batter. StatCast guru Mike Petrello, who works for Major League Baseball, recently ran the numbers and found that Rutschman was on the wrong end of more than 60 missed calls against him on balance by umpires at the plate this year. That is a lot of situations over the course of a season where Rutschman deserved a better count than whatever he got, and he had deserved the advantage of whatever that better count would have given him. And I mean, sometimes I feel like as a fan, you can have a tendency to think, well, like, what difference can one pitch really make? And it's actually really a lot, because if you say that, let's say there's a 1-1 count on Rutschman and he takes a pitch that is outside the strike zone, close, but outside the strike zone. It should be a 2-1 count for Rutschman, and the umpire calls a strike, and instead it's 1-2. So once the count has gone to 1-2, all major league batters this year have accumulated a 503 OPS. After a 2-1 count this year, they have a 790 OPS. And this same trend repeats on basically every two kinds of counts you could imagine that flow from one changed call. Because if you're even talking the first pitch of an at-bat, after an 0-1 count, batters have a 620 OPS. After a 1-0 count, batters have an 830 OPS. And, you know, that's not even getting into called third strikes that were not third strikes. So, I mean, that's a problem. Rutschman is disproportionately suffering from that problem more than all but maybe one or two other players as hitters this season. And I don't know what the solution to that problem is, because, you know, Rutschman being as having as good of an eye as he does is absolutely part of his strengths as a player. So I feel, you know, people are always like, oh, well, he's got to expand the strike zone. No, umpires need to call the correct strike zone, but I don't, you know, they can't be made to do it. And it seems like the any kind of automated balls and strikes technology or pitch challenging technology is not going to arrive for 2024. So Rutschman, I don't know what Rutschman's supposed to do, but I guess the Orioles and him can figure something out over the offseason. Here's one more note about Rutschman, and this is involving Rutschman's weighted on-base percentage. That is WOBA, which is it is kind of a newfangled stat, but it take my word for it. It is accepted as the best measure for a player's offensive contributions. And if you want to run that through a search engine, you can. WOBA. And you can look, it gives you the formula, and you can actually calculate it yourself if you are determined enough to do that. It's a complicated formula more than the simple arithmetic for batting average, on-base, slugging, OPS, etc. But unlike something like wins above replacement, you yourself can find out a player's WOBA. based on just looking at what, how many singles, doubles, et cetera, all their offensive numbers for a season. And then StatCast tracks ex-WOBA, which is expected weighted on-base average based on contact quality, et cetera. Rutschman is at a 369 ex-WOBA. That is 25 points above his WOBA of 344. And just so you know, ex-WOBA of 369 would make Rutschman a top 25 hitter in Major League Baseball. So maybe in addition to the umpires screwing him into bad counts that he doesn't deserve, he's also kind of having some bad luck with regards to the contact he has made. Maybe, I don't know. You never can be too sure about that kind of thing. But as far as Rutschman and what flaws he does or doesn't have, I am coming to mind with a frequent Buck Showalter saying, the former Orioles manager, who would say, never overlook an orchid when you're searching for a rose. And Rutschman, I think, in this analogy, certainly could be said to be the orchid, even if maybe we are still searching for the rose of a player who is always going to have like 5 or 6 WAR per season for, you know, 4 or more years in a row. But that said, if you want to get really excited about Gunnar Henderson and Jackson Holliday, who are younger and do seem to have the sky-high ceilings of, you know, being 5-plus WAR per year players, while waiting to see if Rutschman can get himself back there, you are certainly welcome to do that. And for that matter, if you already want to start thinking about catching prospect Samuel Basayo, who turned 19 years old just last month and reportedly was promoted to AA Bowie yesterday, do not let me stop you from getting excited about any of those players. If you have a thought or question you would like to have discussed in a future episode, you can email camdencastpod@gmail.com. Thank you to everyone who has written in so far. That is all that I've got for today. If you are enjoying this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite platform and leave a rating or review, and tell an Orioles fan in your life about the show. New episodes will be out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning, so I will be back with you on Wednesday, hopefully with a couple of awesome games against the Cardinals to talk about. In between now and then, you can leave a comment on Camden Chat. You'll find me there under the comments with the name Eat More SK, though I do publish articles under my real name, Mark Brown. Good Morning Birdland is a Camden Cast production on the Fans First Sports Network. Until next time, go O's!